D. Mace, Vingen, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen here with you. We are live at the Circus Sportsbook in Kentucky. David James is back at the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. All right. We delayed it as long as we could, but we do have to discuss the Tennessee Titans. Yes. The Tennessee Titans lost 25-3. I did not look at Scorigami. I assume that is not a Scorigami. I will look it up at some point. But Tennessee loses 25-3 to the Jacksonville Jaguars.
We might need to check the Scorigami, though.
We will.
Yeah. Just to double check.
Just to
you
double
don't
check.
Too many 25-3s.
No.
Right. But 25-3 was the final score. Cam Ward coming off of what we all said was the most encouraging performance of his rookie season, laid an egg, just like the rest of the team, on Sunday. From the NFL, Ward's longest completion of the day went for only 16 yards, and only 5 of his completions went for double-digit yards. That left him without a touchdown while averaging just 3.7 yards per attempt, his lowest mark of the season. He also had his worst EPA per dropback as well for the nerds out there. So he went from arguably his best performance of the season to his worst performance of the season. And I hate to break it to you guys, but with the loss yesterday, the Titans have been officially eliminated from playoff contention. So I know you guys were holding out hope that the Titans would turn it around. Unfortunately, the Titans have been eliminated from playoff contention. They will also clinch at least a share of last place in the AFC South. But I want to go back to something that Derek said during our interview with Teron Davenport of ESPN. Derek, you said you were embarrassed by what you watched on the field at Nissan Stadium yesterday. You were a proud member of this franchise for a long time. So when I hear you say that you were embarrassed, because you don't use those words lightly. Willie and I, well, mostly me, I think, can throw around those words. Willie can on occasion. We throw around those words willy-nilly, but when I hear you say it, that's a red flag to me.
Watching them yesterday, and I explained to you guys this, and to Ron on air, but off air, there's one thing to be a bad team. And we know the Titans are not a good. They know they're not. They just don't have enough talent. And the talent that they do have, it's young. So they're still developing that talent. But when you are not a good team, that's one thing. And you go out there and you play and you give it 100% or the energy's high. And, you know, like you've done many, many times this season, you played a hard game, but you're just not good. You're just not a good team. I can stomach that, and I think the fan base can stomach that. Hell, I think the people in the locker room can stomach that. We're just not a good team right now. We went out there. We gave it maximum effort, and you saw it. You felt that the energy was high, but we're just not a good team. I think everybody can stomach that. I think everybody around here can stomach that, including the people that are in the building. What people can't stomach is to watch their team and it's an embarrassment. It's like you're looking for a team that is going to show some life. And this is a division foe. This is a rivalry, if you want to call it that. There's something about playing Jacksonville and Indianapolis and Houston Texans within your vision. I'm talking about just the teams within your division. There's something about playing those teams than it is any other team. Those teams, those games seem to mean more. But why? Because if you win those games, you take control of those games, more than likely, you have a good season. And get it, I wasn't looking for the Titans to, you know, come out and, you know, if they win the game, they win. No. What I wanted to see is a team improve on what they did last game. They did some good things last game. I wanted to see that improvement. I wanted to see, okay, Cam go out and be consistent once more. You know, Elec, you know, getting back. DK being more consistent, the run game, the offensive line, defense. They showed, okay, we can build some consistency here. Coaches always talk about just build one block on top of the other. One block, keep looking down, just keep building. Well, they forgot about that whole speech of keep building and being consistent. Because when a bad team doesn't show up, it looks embarrassing. And I'm going to repeat that again. When a bad team doesn't show up to play, it looks embarrassing. It no longer looks like a bad team. It just looks utterly embarrassing, like you don't even want to watch it no more. I've had people call and text, this is embarrassing. Like they're telling me, this is embarrassing. And as a former player, an alumni, other team, it's like, what is going on? Like, what is really good? That's why I asked Ron, like, did he lose? Because for a minute there, I thought McCoy was gaining a little steam, just a little, not a lot. But I think he was doing the best with what he had, you know. But after yesterday, it was like, wow. Like, I haven't seen this in a very, very long time. Like, this is bad. It's embarrassing. And they should be embarrassed by a good, because, again, you're not a good team. Fine. We understand that. But I was always told that, listen, if you go out there and you give maximum effort, that's half the battle. And it seems like that wasn't the case. I'm saying that's what it seemed to me. I'm watching it. People that are watching it, people that are there, they're telling me, man, this looks bad.
The only games I can remember that were sort of at that level where it just was really hard to get through, physically get through. Like, I want to watch because I'm watching every – like you said, you're looking for those
– exactly.
Guys, who's improving? Like, what about the young guys? How are they coming along? Are they making – win or lose at this point, doesn't matter. In fact, you know, we talked jokingly about Tankathon. That's kind of the thing you hope for. Win as many games as you can but still keep the first pick would be the ideal scenario. But they didn't give you anything to cling to at all. And the only other games that I can think of that sort of fell into that category are games in the maybe the very last week or two where they were just decimated with injuries and they literally didn't – like, there was a game that Matt Mauch had to start because they didn't have anybody else. There was that game, Zach Mettenberger, late in the season, and, like, four offensive linemen were gone, and J.J. Watt just terrorized the team. Like, there's games here and there, but those are a little explained. This team, we know the roster is limited.
Yes.
But they're not decimated by injuries. There are a few guys here and there. It happens at this time of the year. Every team is having to pull guys out of the woodwork. That's how Treylon Burks has emerged on Washington, right? Guys get hurt. You got to pull guys in. Even winning teams, in some cases, have to find and dig for that extra guy. The Titans used to be masters of it when Mike Vrabel was in the heyday. But this is the nucleus, right? The Cushenberry was out, but other than that, you know, you got Latham, you got Skoronski, you got Aya Manor was active anyway.
Don't say Latham. Don't even say Latham because
saying starters.
Yes,
right?
Starters. Yes, yes. But here's my thing. Jeffrey Simmons played a good game, but the bad play overshadowed his good game. He was disruptive.
Yes, he was.
Corey Levin did a good job, but the bad play, the embarrassment overshadowed stuff like that. So when I'm talking about this team being bad, I'm not saying that every player, like Jeffrey is Jeffrey. He showed why he was Jeffrey. He was disruptive. But the team was so bad and it's embarrassing, I can't even talk about Jeff and what he did. He was disruptive. I can't even talk about that. I can't talk about how Corey Levin did a good job, you know, filling in for Cushenberry. It wasn't like I didn't think he wouldn't. Because I thought they should have let Corey Levin remain a starter and let Cushenberry get some more rest at the beginning of the season. Levin played good. But you know what? And there probably are some other guys that probably did well. But the embarrassment overshadowed that. You had – and listen, the kid, he's going to be phenomenal. I think the kid's going to be really good in this league. And I'm talking about DK. But you have guys like him fumbling the ball.
Yes. He's made a few mistakes here the last couple weeks.
And then Cam Ward, it's just like – yesterday was a combination of everything it seemed to have went wrong with the Titans in the last 2 or 3 years, and that game showed it because it was an embarrassment.
The roughing the punter on the 4th and 20, whatever
it was. Like, oh my, and then y'all like,
the penalties,
and makes it look even worse.
The
and I'm not saying
thing with the punter, what's going on with that? Like, I don't even.
We'll get to the Jacksonville punter.
But it made it look bad. Point. It made it look even worse because there were these scuffles and everything else on the sideline. And I'm not saying that the Titans were at fault of it, but when you are a bad, when you're not a good team right now, and you're making all these mistakes, and you went from not being a good team to looking like an embarrassing team, and then you had all these scuffles and stuff going on. Again, I'm not saying it was the Titans' fault, but when that all that is happening, it all comes together and just looks bad on television.
So I can't get worked up about Mike McCoy being the interim head coach because he's an interim head coach. I think I said this last week. Mike McCoy gives off substitute teacher vibes. He knows he's getting paid whether the kids learn something or not. He can wheel out the television, pop in a movie. It doesn't matter. He's not the actual teacher. He just needs to make sure that the kids don't go nuts on his watch.
Nobody pull a fire alarm.
I don't care if anything good happens. Just don't let anything catastrophic happen.
Correct. And we saw what happened with the Titans yesterday. But I read an article by Easton Freeze at A to Z Sports talking about how the Titans made the absolute worst choice for interim coach by naming Mike McCoy as Brian Callahan's quote-unquote successor because, you know, he's not going to obviously have the actual job. But is there something to that? Did the Titans make a mistake by making Mike McCoy the interim head coach? I think, Derek, we talked about this the day he was fired, the day Brian Callahan was fired, and before the Titans had announced that Mike McCoy was taking over. I understand that Mike McCoy in his senior offensive analyst role or whatever it was, it would have been the least disruptive move, right, to make him the interim head coach. You're not taking him away from the special teams. You're not taking him away from the defense. But you said, Derek, I remember this vividly, that you should have gone with Bones Fossil. Mm-hmm. You should have gone with Denard Wilson because they're in there every day. We don't know what the level of involvement Mike McCoy has with these players on a daily basis, but Fossil and Wilson are in there every day. Mm-hmm. So if you want an interim coach who the players can respect, you take one of them. I remember you voicing those concerns, and I'm wondering if that is coming to fruition here, that the Titans have tuned out Mike McCoy. It doesn't matter. He's not going to be here next year. What do I care? Like, I'm wondering if you think that's perhaps ultimately playing out.
I guarantee you. And let's go further back than that. When McCoy was hired, what did I say?
He is Brian Callahan's replacement.
Exactly. I said
fired.
The minute they hired him. Yes. I said, Mike, this is for one purpose and one purpose only. When they fire Callahan, they're just going to move Mike McCoy in, and he's going to be the head coach.
Let me throw out another question to you while you answer the other question I threw to you. Mm-hmm. Would the Titans have been better off in this scenario just keeping Brian Callahan for the whole season?
Yes. You'd have been better off.
Willie,
yes.
Do you agree with that?
Well, philosophically, you know me, I'm not a fire the coach guy.
That is true.
And they were adamant at the press conference. They thought it would be better under Mike McCoy, especially offensively. And I guess you could say Cam Ward has improved some.
Marginally,
I
would say.
Marginally?
Incrementally.
He's improved.
I love if you look like.
But is that McCoy?
24 for 38. Pretty good. Huh?
Is that McCoy or more Bo Hardigree?
That's a fair question. I don't know. But collectively, it's
both.
Like you said, it's marginal. They haven't won a game. Mm-hmm. But it just goes to show the coach can only do so much with the players. They don't have the players. It was going to be hard. I don't care who the coach was.
But
back to what you were saying before.
But when he got hired, I knew exactly why that was. Because they plan on – because, again, no matter what I – thought their record could possibly be. We didn't. None one of us thought they were a playoff team. I think I gave them 6 wins, maybe 7.
I said 5, which looks embarrassing right now.
I think in their mind, man, it may be true, it may not. In their mind, they knew what was going to happen. They knew this roster, and they knew what the record was going to look like. You hire Mike McCoy for what reason? Like, what? You got too many cooks in the kitchen as it is now. You hire him, a former head coach, a former offensive coordinator, quarterback's coach. So you hire him, and he's already on a hot seat, meaning Callahan. Oh, he's Callahan replaced. He's going to be the interim coach when Callahan get fired, and that happened. Now, here's what I want people to understand. When that happened, I said, yeah, I knew it was going to happen, but I said, listen, wouldn't it be better to hire either Bones or Denard Wilson, because they have a pulse of the locker room.
Yes.
Those guys listen. He's interacting. Bones interact with all of them.
And Bones has interim head coaching experience.
And he has interim head coaching experience. But Bones, he touches everybody because of special teams. That would have been the more logical decision, because I guarantee you this. Close to guarantee, let's say this. Close to guarantee. I don't know if that could be.
An almost guarantee.
An almost guarantee. That you would have heard guys come out by now saying, we want him as our head coach. I don't think the morale would have been lost. I don't know if it's lost now, but it seems like at that game,
looks
something's
like
going on.
It's questionable.
But if Denard or Bones were the head coach, I truly believe, because those guys were in it with them at the beginning, like, they're always in communications. I believe those guys would have fought harder for those two coaches than McCoy. And listen, I'm not blaming this on McCoy. I'm not. He was in a no-win situation the minute he took this job. He didn't have as much contact with the team that Denard Wilson would have had or Bones Fossil would have had. He didn't have that. He was a guy coming in to sort of see what was going on, and then you make him the head coach, and he's really not connected to the players like that. To me, that may have been a mistake, but hell, it ain't like, you know, keeping Callahan was going to win them any more games. So I think it was one of those mistakes where you can get over it, because it's not like you're keeping this staff next year or this head coach next year. You can get over it, hopefully. But I always questioned that, even when they made it, even though I knew that they hired McCoy ultimately to be the head coach. Why you just didn't go to Bones or Denard? They are in this. They've been in this.
615-737-1025. We'll take your thoughts on the Titans, a 25-3 loss to the Jaguars. By the way, that is not a scoregami. That score has happened 4 times before, most recently in October of 2021. So it had been a few years. But not a scoregami, unfortunately.
Almost.
25-3, Jacksonville wins against the Tennessee Titans. We'll take your thoughts on that. 615-737-1025. We are presented by Bax Homeworks, which transforms kitchens, bathrooms, and living spaces into places you can't wait to come home to. Get a free estimate now at BAXHomeworks.com. D-Mace, Finnegan, and Donick, 1025 The Game, live from the Circa Sportsbook in Franklin, Kentucky. Monday Night Football tonight. Do I even remember what the matchup is off the top of my head?
It is the New England Patriots and the New York Giants.
That's a big one for the Tankathon.
It's a big one in the Tankathon.
That's a big one for the Tankathon.
Come on, Jackson Dart. Let's go.
New England favored by 7.5 in that matchup.
And Dart is back, right?
Yes, he is going to play. He is going to play. Also,
no Jameis Winston. For our entertainment purposes.
Oh, unfortunately.
Because Jameis will always entertain us.
We can always count
on that.
I just want to read the first two lines of this story written by Michael DiRocco, the ESPN NFL Nation Jaguars reporter. Quote, Jaguars punter Logan Cook allegedly saying he would kill Tennessee Titans running back Julius Chestnut during a skirmish in Sunday's game is normal trash talk between players, Jaguars head coach Liam Cohen said. Quote, I've probably heard that said, 100 times from players in games, so whatever, Cohen said Monday afternoon. Anyone ever threatened to kill you, Derek Mason?
Nobody has ever told me they would kill me. And I don't think I've ever told somebody I'd kill you on the football field.
I can't see Derek.
It's not that serious. I've gotten angry on the football field, and I didn't want to hit some guys. And I didn't say the things I regret and shouldn't have said. I'd have been eating soap for a very long time. But I've never told nobody I'm going to kill you or them telling me they're going to kill me.
And of all of the people on the Jaguars, of all the people on a football team who would threaten to kill an opponent,
the punter.
Where would you put the punter on that list? Had the long snapper?
Right. It's a tight race.
No slight to my man Craig Hendricks, because I know Craig Hendricks would have probably took a couple people down. Yes. No slight to him. But, yeah, the kicker would have been the last person.
Julius Chestnut implied, like, that there was some, like, creative, like, he mentioned there was a lot of things. Wouldn't he have just said, he said he was going to kill me? It's not that simple, is it? Like, he made it sound like it was something more than that.
Did he just walk up to him and say, I'm going to kill you? Like, what? Like, did he say something after that? Did he say something before that? What? Like, because you saw him coming over. So did he say it as he was coming over? Or did he get in your face and say it?
Read the quotes from Chestnut. This is a mystery that I'm not going to take the time to solve because it's not that big of a deal.
Chestnut, who blocked Cook during Titans returner Chim Dike's 47-yard return of a previous punt, said after the game he was, quote, just trying to play hard, and he came up to me and said he was going to kill me. So I don't know what made him do that. That was surprising to me. I ain't never seen nothing like that before.
Well, I mean, Chestnut, I would say to Chestnut, like jokingly, were you afraid? Like, were you really afraid that he was going to kill you? Yeah, that he was like something was going to happen. Were you really afraid, or did you just say, "Yeah, whatever, man," and walk away?
But they put this in the story. This is on the ESPN ticker thing.
You know what? And I don't want to make light of things because I just don't. And I understand words do cause harm, lots of it. So I'm never going to take that and say it didn't mean anything. But what it's starting to look like, because there was other guys coming out saying other things. And get it, listen, I've been on football fields, you know, almost half my life. And I've heard some things and whatnot, but I never took it serious, you know.
Yeah.
Like, as far as what you're going to do to me. I've never taken, like, once it's over, it's over, I'm moving on. What this looks like from afar is, and I'm not saying that, you know, Chestnut or Jeff or anybody else that said something, you know, I'm not saying anything bad about them, but because you're only saying what was said to you. You're only relaying what was said to you when they asked you, Jeff, what was all the skirmish about? Well, Jeff told them, like, what it was about. But what it's starting to look like is a bunch of whining. I know that's not the case, because again, I don't want to minimize words because they are very hurtful and they can cause people to do things that they probably wouldn't normally do. So I'm not going to say that, you know, downplay it. It does, based how the game went and me knowing the game and, you know, when guys say stuff within the game, at least when I played, I don't know what they mean, but at least when I played, my experience, we didn't mean that. It was just in the heat of the battle. You went about your business. Yeah, you may have, you know, gotten somebody's face, but you went about your business after that. You didn't, oh, that guy called me this, or that guy called me that. It was, yeah, we got into a tussle, man. It was what it was. I shouldn't have did it. But we didn't say, well, he said this to me, or he said that to me. The optics doesn't look great, if you understand what I'm saying. And again, I'm not faulting Chestnut, and I'm not faulting Jeffrey, because the question was asked of them, and they just answered it. But after watching that game and then the stuff coming out of it, it's like, man, you're making it look worse. You really are. Y'all play bad, and now Jackson, you know what Jacksonville's doing? They laughing at him.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, look at them. They can't handle a little trash talk. Look at them. That's what they're saying.
They play again.
And they play again, yes.
At the end of the season.
So I'm sure there will be a lot. They feel – now they – you know what they think now? Oh, we got them. We're in their heads now.
Yeah.
We're in their heads. Instead of the Tyson just saying, you know what, stuff was said, what was said. Doesn't matter what was said. I shouldn't have did it. I shouldn't have gotten in the scuffle. I should have went about my business. That's all the reporters needed to hear.
One texter says, oh, man, if the Titans are this soft, wait till they go against the Niners and Juwan Jennings. Apparently that dude deserves to get hit in the nuts, according to some defensive players in the league. I don't think they're playing the 49ers this season, are they?
Yes, they are.
Yeah. Oh.
They are.
Yeah.
I've just.
It's coming up. Yeah. It's coming up.
I've just forgotten about the schedule.
Yeah, you know.
Let's just get this season over with.
Week by week. You're not looking ahead.
Yes, that is true. One texter says, yesterday was on the coaches. When a team comes out like that, they have zero leadership. They are all looking for jobs next season and don't give a bleep about this team/season.
Okay. That texter, partly right. But then again, this is me. I don't know if everybody else operates like me. I don't need a coach to get me up. I don't. Like, the privilege of walking out on that field in front of 70,000 people, that is what gets me up. That's what gets me. I don't need – coaches, rah-rah speeches, they're cool. And you need to be the CEO of the team. I get it. All that stuff matters. But as an individual player, there's nothing a damn coach can say to me once we get in between those lines to make me go out there and play. There's nothing he can do. His work was done. Once Sunday came, because there's no talking. Once Sunday comes and I cross it, his job is over. So if I can't get up for a game, that's not his fault. It's really not. It's my fault. What do I need to do to make sure each and every week, damn the coach, each and every week that I go out there and I put a game together that I'm going to look back. It may not be perfect, but I know I gave maximum effort. I know I went out there and I did my job to the best of my ability. I know I was up for the game. They didn't seem like they were up for the game. I can't blame the coaches for that. I just can't. At least not coming from a former player. I'm not blaming the coaches for that one.
So the 49ers play the Titans in 2 weeks. I had no idea because I'm just trying to get through this season.
Well, we're trying to figure out who they play next week, man.
We know it's the Cleveland Browns next week, and we will have the Shedeur Sanders-Cam Ward conversation at some point this week. Lane Kiffin has been introduced as LSU's new head coach. And first, okay, there are a couple of things here. First, the fun rumor on social media is that Lane Kiffin's dog, Juice, isn't actually his dog. He's a PR dog.
What kind of dog is Juice?
I think he's like maybe a golden retriever.
Yes, he's a golden retriever.
So who has Juice now?
I have no idea.
Apparently he has a handler. So it's technically Lane's dog, but he has a handler that takes care of Juice.
But if you heard that Lane Kiffin ditched his dog for LSU, would you believe it?
I could. I can't believe it. No, you can't stoop that low.
Lane Kiffin.
You can't stoop that low.
Lane Kiffin. That's you what guys like that do to their dogs.
No, because you know, like anybody, Willie, you know, and you know, Adam. Listen, everybody knows that you can do whatever you want to just about anybody you want to. But when you mess with a dog, it's over with.
Oh, you're
it is
trouble.
Over with.
Yep. Career's so over.
I am not going to believe that Lane Kiffin did that.
Okay, how about this? From Old Row Sports on X, the Oxford Yoga Girls are dishing the tea on Lane Kiffin's antics in class. Here are some comments.
Oh, my goodness.
When he would start doing completely random workouts mid-class and not follow the instructor. I will miss him walking in late for class with that damn hoodie on, but knowing his mat is ready and waiting on him. And coming in 5 minutes late and leaving 20 minutes early.
Wow, Lane, like...
No one is safe. If you ditch a school, your yoga habits are fair game as far as I'm concerned.
Like, why wouldn't you want to stay? Like, why wouldn't you want to stay the whole time at yoga? I mean, if you're going to go, you might as well stay the whole time.
Was it hot yoga?
20 minutes early.
Even if it's hot yoga, I enjoy hot yoga more than just non-hot yoga.
Man, oh, man.
What's the full workout of a yoga? An hour?
Yeah, ask Derek. I have no idea.
So if he shows up,
or you could do is it? You could do a 60-minute, or you could do a 90. Is it 120 minutes? So it's like an hour.
Matthew in Nashville says it's funny how this situation has
not 120 minutes. I mean 90 minutes, 60 or 90.
Matthew in Nashville says it's funny how this situation has unintentionally brought Ole Miss and Tennessee fans together all over their shared Lane drama.
Well, they ain't lie. You count USC in it too. But was that drama?
Oh, yeah.
Oakland?
Oh, yes.
Oakland. Oh, my gosh.
Drama.
So, I mean.
But there was this whole Lane Kiffin rehabilitation tour, right?
Yes.
The E60 special. I'm a changed man. And he's put a lot of work into his life. I am not
he's still changing, but there's still
I'm not discrediting that. But as I said, it's like the ex who cheats on you, and this time, baby, I promise it was the last time. I'm going to change. And you take him back, knowing full well that it's in his DNA.
Well, Lane, I guess it's in Lane's DNA. But if that's the case, then, like, why don't you –
That's your guy, LSU. Who you wanted. That's who you wanted.
But if he did that to the dog, then shame on Lane. Shame on Lane.
I don't believe that one. I wouldn't have a hard time believing it if I actually did. Brian on our text line says, I know you mentioned it earlier, but I am still not hearing much from these loudmouth losers known as Vols fans. We heard them all last week. Now where they at? Anchor down.
You know they ain't call. I want them to call in, but they ain't going to call in.
I want to hear from
Vols
fans.
Man.
Well, how do you think, like, I know Robbie and Joe had this conversation earlier, and I thought it was an interesting conversation about how Vols fans will process this season. An 8-4 finish, a heartbreaking loss to Georgia at home. They got whooped by Vanderbilt on Saturday. When you consider where things were in the spring with the Iamaali drama, and it felt like Joey Aguilar was the ultimate consolation prize, and there were several key players on defense who were out for most, if not all, of the season. You wouldn't have known that at the time. But it's like, with all of the Nico stuff, it's like, hey, 8-4. We talked about this. Like, would Vols fans take that?
I think I asked Chad Withrow before the season started if he would take 8-4. Yeah. And I think he was like, okay.
Considering what had happened.
I think they were angling maybe 9-3.
Mm-hmm.
But I think 8-4 was probably the baseline, wouldn't we say?
Yes.
But the problem is they tasted the
– And that's why –
They tasted the playoff. Yes. Like, they could have made it. They weren't that far.
Uh-huh. That's why
I say – A couple of really tight losses.
This – you got to consider – I know what happened at the beginning of the season. I know the whole quarterback switcheroo. I get it. But once you got in the season, you started winning games. You started looking good. That's when – I'm not like if UT fans. Well, we weren't supposed to be good, and you know, y'all were. Yeah, y'all were supposed to be good. Y'all started off really good, and if a few games go this way, the other way, then y'all don't have three losses. Y'all have a one loss going into the Vanderbilt game. So I'm not going to let UT off the hook again. I said this weeks ago. I said, I am not letting UT off the hook if they don't make the college football playoffs. I'm not going to sit here and say, well, it still was a good season, and let UT fans just say, oh, it was a good season. No, because y'all started off really good, and everybody was, yes, let's go Aguilar. No more Nico. Playoff bound. Let's go. And then all of a sudden,
it flips.
It's
the expectations
exactly.
Went up. This goes again to
– And rightfully so.
The best argument Vanderbilt has as a 10-2 team is the teams that they played – If you take a look, they are better than the record and from a distance. And I use the LSU example and say, you know, you're the skeptic. You're out in Colorado or whatever. You're arguing for BYU. And I say, look at the teams that LSU lost to. They lost to Ole Miss, Vanderbilt, Texas A&M, Alabama, and Oklahoma. And then the skeptic would say, they're 7-5. You beat a 7-5 team. They're on rank. But there is a big difference. Mm-hmm. Tennessee, as you just mentioned, Tennessee was a very makeable field goal away from beating Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
Close to beating Oklahoma. Oklahoma, their kicker had a career day, right? The guy made everything from, I don't know.
The kicker with the short shorts.
That game could have easily gone either way. And that's what separates Tennessee from being in the playoff hunt, where that would have been a quasi-playoff game on Saturday. So Tennessee, so all that to say, it stings when you get whipped by your rival like that, the way they did, especially how bad they wanted that one. They would have been having a party today. Let's make no mistake about it. They would have been taunting Pavia all over this town today on all of the radio shows. They would have had a pep rally. They wanted that. And they got smoked.
That's
so
right,
they're
Willie.
They're awfully quiet. But Tennessee is a good football team. They're a good football team. That was a great win for Vanderbilt. So Vanderbilt fans got to be careful. They don't want to go on too much because you want that to be your, you know, one of your featured wins, and you want that to look good for the committee.
They had a 3-point loss against Georgia, a 6-point loss against
Oklahoma.
And
they lost at Bama.
They threw a pick six
on the last play of the half where they were going in for a touchdown. The guy, that was one of Aguilar's worst moments of the season.
And that turned the game right there.
Because
they're going
you
in
could
to
argue
score.
If they go in and score there, that's going to go right down to the wire.
615-737-1025. We have heard from some Vols fans, so we will get your reaction coming up next. But before
Pep Bradley has been canceled.
Before we go to break, Jeremy in Clarksville says, for the right price, Lane Kiffin would definitely ditch his dog. And I totally agree. 615-737-1025. We'll wrap up the show next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. As always, thank you to the Circus Sportsbook in Kentucky for having us. We did hear from some Tennessee fans. At the beginning of the show, I said, Tennessee fans, y'all were talking some serious smack last week in the text line ahead of the matchup against Vanderbilt. And I haven't heard too many people, but we have heard from some. Matthew in Nashville says, I'm fine with 8-4, but failing to beat a single ranked team is upsetting. The Georgia game gave a lot of false hope. If we have a better kicker, we might have had a different season. Vandy was the better team Saturday. We shot ourselves in the foot with bad play calling and a refusal from Heupel to change it up despite the fact Vandy literally ran the same defensive play every possession. Tim Banks refusing to put a spy on Pavia was rage-inducing. I pray this was the last game Tim Banks gets to coach as the Vols DC.
There was, I watched Josh Heupel's post-game press conference. There were some questions of sort of seeing if you could get a clue if there would be changes on the defensive staff. And so that's TBD. Of course, Josh Heupel wanted no part of it. But, Josh Heupel looked like a beaten man at that podium. Like, he was chawing. It looked like 12 pieces of gum. he was just chomping at the gum, and he was just, like, disappointing. Yeah, got to do better. Yeah. I'll get into that later. Yeah. Yeah. We just didn't get it done. Like, he was depressed.
Mm-hmm. Well, he had every right to be depressed. I'd have been depressed if I was the head coach watching that. But again, I don't think UT's a bad team. I think they're a good team. I just think Vandy was a better team. And I think UT had their moments this season where even with the loss to Vandy, they still could have had themselves in a position to make the college football playoffs. But they went into the game, you know, with, what, 3 losses already or 2 losses?
Tennessee was 8-3.
Yeah, so they had 3 going in. So they couldn't get into the playoff picture even if they trounced.
No, I knew that, but I'm saying they had their chance
during the season. This is what I was disappointed with. I was disappointed with Heupel in this regard. They were kind of asking a series of questions of how much of it was Pavia, how much of it was your defense? And he was leaning way more towards, I mean, he had an opportunity to credit Pavia, and he did it in a very limited way, where he could have maybe even made himself and his defensive staff look better by saying, look, the guy's the best player in the country. Or you know, he didn't have to say that, but he said, the guy's a great player for a reason. He's been doing this week after week, and he didn't really do that.
Yeah.
So I was disappointed. I wanted to see what he would say about Pavia. I do feel like a lot of teams, they don't think he's that good going in. He doesn't look. He fools you. He walks into a room and you're like, that's Pavia? He doesn't look menacing. He's not big. He looks smaller in person than he does on TV, I think. But so I think there's a tendency sometimes like that guy can't be that good, right? He's not that good. We've all gone up against that guy, right? Mm-hmm. We're like, wait, do we play him? He's not that good. And then you walk out of there going, damn.
What happens
he just kicked our butt.
What happens is that you don't want to believe it. You don't want to believe what you're watching on film.
Yeah.
because what you're watching on film is like, this, like, why can't they stop him? You're thinking, he's not this good. We got him.
He's
we got
won
him.
His mouth. Just wait till he comes in here.
And then
come
once
on
you
in.
Once you get him in person, it's like, oh, wow. Like, yeah. Oh, he is good.
That was so much.
He is slippery.
I think that was what was so much fun for Vanderbilt fans to watch, is because I do think Pavia ran his mouth. Tennessee filed it away. They're like, they're coming to Knoxville. Come on in. I said it last week. Let you guys run your mouth. Come on in. Let's see what happens. And I think privately, inwardly, you could tell the way they were going after. They were jawing at him. When they stopped him, they really went hyped up on the sideline, right? The few times when they got the interceptions, and they should, right? It was an emotional thing. Mm-hmm. And then by the end of the game, the trees were falling in the forest, right?
Yeah, it wasn't looking good for UT at all.
Let's go to Tim on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHunter.com. Tim, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. That game was a great game. I've been a Vanderbilt fan all my life. My dad worked there for 38 years, worked in the gym. He was there, actually, Willie, when you played basketball there. He did maintenance. And I knew Coach Skinner. I knew Coach Fogler. I knew a bunch of them. But anyway, back to the game. We just outplayed them. They got their butts kicked. They don't know what to do. They're scared now. We've turned the corner, and are they going to be able to keep up? The other thing that really aggravated me, they arrested Diego's brother. You know what he was arrested for?
No.
Public intoxication and waving a flag. If they arrested everyone in that stadium for public intoxication, there wouldn't have been 500 people watching the game.
Hey, watch out. My son was at that game. I don't know. But he's been one of the 500.
He would have been one of the 500.
Okay. He would have been one of the 500. Okay.
They arrested him because he's Diego's brother. That's all it is.
Thank you for the call.
Well, I don't know what the drama is now about that. That was a big. They had the video of everybody walking them out. It was I guess Tennessee had to get excited about something. But apparently, it had to do initially. They
we
could
get
on
your brother.
Railing.
We gonna get you.
Here is the report. Here is the report from Mike Wilson of the Knoxville News Center
about the arrest.
Yes, okay. According to the police report obtained by Knox News, Javier Pavia was repeatedly spoken to by University of Tennessee event staff about blocking the view of others with a flag and told him to remove the flag. The arresting officer witnessed him arguing with event staff. The officer who filed the arrest report said Javier Pavia was slurring his speech, unsteady on his feet, and appeared drunk. Quote, Javier Pavia was also extremely verbally combative with event staff and myself, the report said, end quote.
I will say this.
It's the second time he has been arrested at a Vanderbilt game this season.
I will say this in all seriousness. When you go to the other team's field, you got to be different. You cannot be that guy. I have seen fans at Vanderbilt Stadium of the other team acting like that. If a Vanderbilt fan's acting like that, you might get a break. Yeah. Hey, D-Mace, just take it down, all right?
Just a little bit.
Just take it down a notch, okay? If you're on the other team, they give you no slack. You're like, you, come with me. I've seen it happen.
Oh, my goodness.
I've seen it happen many times. You don't. Your day's over. So when you go to the other team, you look, Vanderbilt, not often historically do they have a chance to go into somebody else's house and be able to do it. You can't act like it's your house.
Man,
when you go
they
over
arrested
there. That's the lesson.
They arrested his brother. Gosh. Like, that's like you couldn't get the quarterback so you got the brother. Like, seriously. And again, I get it. He was drunk and you were asking him to do something and he wouldn't do it. Okay, I get it. But I guess you couldn't get Diego, so you got Javier. What's it,
Javier Pavia. Say that
Javier,
10 times
Javier
fast.
Pavia.
Javier Pavia.
Yeah, so.
Say that 10 times fast. I speaking of the Pavia family, I have been I am obligated by law, and by law, I mean my wife. That outside of this reference to Diego Pavia's mother, I am no longer allowed to bring up Diego Pavia's mother.
Okay, this is what I didn't, because in previous games, when Vanderbilt was playing on television, I guess it's more so at home, they show his parents a lot.
Mm-hmm. Oh, all the
they
time.
They didn't show his parents
much. It was
not
like Wimbledon, where they show the guy's wife every time between every point.
But they didn't show his family much in this game.
No, they didn't.
They didn't show his
family. I wonder if people said, look,
because
it was getting over the top. Like, how many times do you need to, even when they're doing well, it's like, you don't need to show that.
Remember when people were bent out of shape about the number of times Taylor Swift was shown.
Exactly.
But the NFL kept showing it.
But you know what? I think Diego Pavia's mother has been shown more at Vanderbilt games than Taylor Swift has been shown
at
during Chiefs games.
It would be interesting to track.
Yeah. Especially the last few home games they had.
Oh, I'm speaking of
the
Swift.
Kentucky game was unreal.
Yeah. Speaking of Taylor Swift from last season. I'm sure some of the novelty is worn off this time around. But I would love to. I would love to get a comparison of screen time for Taylor Swift at Chiefs games last season versus Diego Pavia's mom at Vanderbilt games this
season. I'm sure it was Diego Pavia's mom.
I think it's pretty close.
Here, the sad part about it, Adam, is you're not allowed to talk about
it. I'm not allowed to talk about it anymore.
Yeah. See, you watch. You said you were too much into it at the beginning.
You know what?
You brought up the name too many times at the beginning.
My wife had just cut me some slack, and
I took
the slack. And then on Sunday morning, she says, "You gotta stop."
She gave me. She gave an inch. She took 3 miles.
She says, "Why don't you tweet about me being a hot mom?" I'm like, "Well, that goes without saying.
It's a given. Yes,
that goes without saying.
Exactly.
Try to save yourself.
Yes, that goes without saying. But as we've said before,
I told you you were going.
We are
on the couch.
Hot mom loving program.
There you go.
Diego Pavia's mother. My wife.
I love how you mentioned Diego Pavia. but not your wife.
Yeah. Well, okay. I got to get out of here before I get in.
Yes, you
don't
get yourself in trouble.
You're the one who did it, though.
Hold on. Willie's riding home with you, and he's just letting you go. He's just letting you talk.
He's got that shovel. He's digging. He just keeps digging. I try to get the shovel out of his hand.
We got to get out of here before I say something else that's going to get me in trouble.
Saved by the bell.
Yes, we will be live tomorrow at Bridgestone Arena. The Predators are at home against the Calgary Flames. Barry Trotz will join us for his weekly chat at 5 o'clock. Trevor Maddich will join us at 4:20. We will get more into the college football playoff discussion. We will also get deeper into the Heisman Trophy conversation. Should Diego Pavia be the favorite? We will discuss that tomorrow, but we will catch you all tomorrow, 3 o'clock, right here on 102.5 The Game.
Be loved, love on your people. Have a safe, blessed, and wonderful day. I love you. The team loves you. You hear this music. Don't you ever forget about us, because we will be back tomorrow on these airwaves at 3 p.m. Peace.